On this week's show, we do a roundup of several stories with the Texas Scorecard Capital Bureau as the legislative session is coming down to the wire. We'll also check in and get an update on a story from Central Texas from last week. In our interview, we talked to Derek Cohen with Right on Crime on just what the heck's going on with the Dallas County DA's shoplifting policy that has been in the news. And we close with a commentary from Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan. Welcome back, friends and neighbors. This is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. Lots of articles going up there on a daily basis, particularly as we approach the end of the regular session for the 86th Texas Legislature. I've got Brandon Waltons and Destin Sinsky, our Capitol Bureau reporters here. Lots to cover. Wanted to talk to you guys about a few different things. Brandon, just to set the stage here, you had an article up about the deadlines that are coming up. If folks are paying attention, or maybe if they haven't been paying attention to what's going on in the legislature, everything's coming down to the wire now over the next couple of weeks or so.
I mean, this truly, we are drawing to an end here, and those deadlines are popping up. I mean, the legislature meets. They meet for 140 days. They started back in January. Right now, we're closing in on those final week or two here. And that's when you have these deadlines set out. And so the House, Texas House, has already passed their deadline for passing House bills out before they can go to the Senate. Now the other chambers are basically voting out bills that had already passed in the other chambers. So a lot of these deadlines coming out, and very interesting that you still have the big issues, the school finance reform and property tax reform and relief, these big bills that had passed earlier on in the session still being hammered out right now.
Essentially the big issues, nothing big, you know, passes until the very end. So there's still an opportunity for input, and you don't know what is going to pass, what isn't going to pass. All these things coming up. Last day of session, of course, May 27th.
Yes, so, May 27th is when it all comes to a close. Yeah,
so that's coming around. A big issue that's on the move out of the Texas House and over to the Senate, and we'll have to see how it moves, the House moving a permanent income tax ban.
That's correct, Tony. So two-thirds for the two-thirds of the members of the chambers need to pass this. It's a constitutional amendment.
And then it would go to the voters for approval.
Right, correct. So that just needing a majority at the ballot box this November if the Senate approves it. But right now, just barely clearing 100 members of the Texas House supporting a ban on the income tax.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. So you needed two-thirds of the chamber to propose this constitutional amendment. And they got 100 members. I mean, it was exactly
100 members. Exactly two-thirds. You even had Speaker Dennis Bonin joining in and voting for the bill in order to get it to reach that threshold.
Yeah, and so that is now going over to the Senate. They're going to have to – they got some Democrats on board in the House in order to move this thing. It was an interesting split amongst more moderate Democrats who say, hey, we know Texans hate the income tax, hate the idea of an income tax.
Right.
We need to be on board with – you know, where voters are, and the more radical Democrats saying, well, yeah, but we actually want to raise taxes.
we want all options on the table, they'd say.
Yeah, it was in fact exactly what was said. Hey, we need to leave all options available. This goes to the Texas Senate. They've got to get two-thirds there. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the question at this point.
Well, and that's going to be an uphill battle. I mean, in the Senate, very, very close margins there with Republicans and Democrats this session, relatively. And they're going to need to get a few Democrats, probably I think two Democrats on board
with
this.
So if all the Republicans are united, they got to get two Democrats, and then they could pass it out of the Senate and then kick that over to the voters for a approval of a permanent ban.
But, Tony, this session you haven't seen as many votes come down on party line in the Senate as you have in the House. So it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility.
So that's an issue to keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks. Another thing that is just popping up out of, you know, essentially out of nowhere and will be a huge issue, this revision of the revenue estimate from Comptroller Hager.
Yeah, yeah. And so about $500 million has been added to his estimate for the next biennium. So
this is basically the amount of money that he says legislators are going to have to spend. Because you kind of have to predict the future.
Yep.
What do we think we're going to bring in tax revenue? That's what you can spend. And he says, hey, you got an extra $500 million here.
Right.
Immediate reaction, and kind of framing of it is, well, is this going to go to more spending? You say, throw it away, or do we do it for property tax relief?
Yeah, I mean, lawmakers entered the session with about a $9 billion surplus. This extra $500 million. The big question people are asking is, are we going to grow government with this money? Which a lot of the proposals in the budget and some of the school spending bills that have come out, that's what they do with a lot of this $10 billion surplus they have already. And so the question is, this is $500 million. This extra cash, is that going to go towards growing government, or is it going to go to property tax relief be returned essentially to the taxpayers?
Yeah, and so that'll be a fight that folks really need to get engaged on because, you know, if nobody's paying attention, they'll spend it, right? That's kind of the thing. If people are paying attention, well, they'll do the right thing and give it back to taxpayers. Final thing I wanted to talk about, as we're headed down to the line here, lots of these bills, people may be familiar with this, we have the sunset process in Texas, where supposedly we review these agencies every 12 years and we're supposed to get rid of agencies that don't do anything. That system is like breaking down as we get down to the line.
So it's made up of members of both chambers, appointments, you know, from whoever presides over the chamber, lieutenant governor and the speaker of the house. And then actually, I think Governor Abbott gets to make a couple of appointments, and there's some citizens on there. But it's really just kind of all for show, Tony, because the legislature repeatedly, year after year, rejects the recommendations of this committee that says, you know, certain agencies either don't, you know, perform at standard or are incredibly inefficient or have outlived their purpose.
Well, Destin, you had an article up about the Plumbers Board. So there's lots of these agencies being renewed. We see this every session, particularly here at the end of the cycle. The bureaucrats amazingly say, hey, let's get rid of this Plumbers Board.
Yep.
And they wanted to get rid of regulation on geoscientists earlier this session.
Right.
And the politicians say, No. The bureaucrats said to get rid of it, but we want to keep it.
Right, right.
We want to continue to regulate these things that even the bureaucrats say is unnecessary.
Yeah, so the Plumbers Board basically is the most egregious example because, you know, they have a terrible weight for these licenses that they're supposed to give out, and they were going to be absorbed by a more efficient agency, and lawmakers rejected the recommendation.
Yeah, lawmakers
entirely.
Say, okay, now we don't want to improve efficiency and do this. Well, that's something to keep an eye on. I encourage listeners, go check out these articles that the Capitol Bureau is putting out. Lots of important things to keep an eye on and be engaged in as we come down to the wire.
Absolutely, the final stretch.
Next, let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau. Jacob, I wanted to get an update on this article. We touched on this issue last week in our roundup of the local elections. Cedar Park, there was this race that came down, we thought, to one vote. Now it's coming down to two votes the other way. Tell us about what's going on there.
Yeah, Tony, it's been a wild ride, and it's not over yet. This Cedar Park City Council race initially showed that the incumbent, Heather Jeffs, won by one vote. But then, a few days later, after officials counted some provisional ballots, mail ballots, the race flipped to a two-vote victory for challenger Rodney Robinson. And now the incumbent is calling for an official recount.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that in a second, but let's talk a little bit about what's going on here with this race in Cedar Park. Central Texas, kind of a standalone city, but also suburb of Austin. It kind of depends on how you define it. But tell us a little bit about what the issues were there, what was going on.
Yeah, so in the whole election, there were three city council seats up for grabs. And on one side, you had a slate of three incumbent candidates who have all voted to raise taxes and make special deals with businesses.
Yeah, and you mentioned the tax burden there's really gone up.
Oh, absolutely. The average Cedar Park homeowner is now paying roughly $500 more to the city than they did just a handful of years ago. But in the election, so you had that one side of tax-raising candidates, and the other, you had a slate who ran as conservatives on fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, and so we've got this race literally coming down to the individual single votes, one vote one way or two votes the other way. That's going to be going to a recount and being examined there. What about the other two campaigns?
Yeah, the other two races were split. One of the tax-raising incumbents won, and then one of the conservatives won.
Now, it's always a challenge. Anytime you see an incumbent, incumbents always have this advantage. And so anytime you see challengers winning a race, what is it that was going on there? I mean, how did people actually upset at least one of these races and potentially the second one?
Well, absolutely. You saw a lot of grassroots activity. On one side, you had the local Republican Party getting involved, saying, hey, we got progressives trying to get on the city council. We don't want to raise taxes
in what's viewed as a conservative city.
Right, right. And then on the other side, you had the local Democratic, the county Democratic Party actually getting involved, pushing these progressive tax raising candidates. Yeah. And so there was a lot of activity going on in this struggle for power.
Pretty interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on it and see how this recount goes and know how this one turns out.
Absolutely, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to have on the program this week Derek Cohen with Right on Crime. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Tony.
You know, I wanted to bring you in. You're kind of my resident criminal justice reform expert. I think we've talked about a few issues in the past. And I wanted to come in and talk about this policy up in Dallas County. It's been in the news. Some folks may have heard about it, where the DA, you know, the headline is, the DA says, just shoplift all you want to. You know, steal anything you want to. If it's under $750. Steal anything you want in Dallas County. Go nuts. We're just not going to prosecute that sort of thing anymore. And everybody's looking at this, pulling their hair out, going, okay, this is the end of the world. It's going to be total chaos, pandemonium. And I thought, okay, Derek can set us straight. What is going on here? What kind of maybe some missteps that are going on? What might be redeemable in this policy? Because they've been pushing back and trying to defend it. Let's unpack what's actually going on. So, okay, can you set us straight? What's really going on in Dallas County with this reform initiative up there?
Well, Tony, I can certainly try. So, yeah, it all started back in, I would say, November of 2018, when Judge John Criseau was elected to be the Dallas County District Attorney. Now, kind of a broader context of that is, you know, across the nation, we see a lot of folks with, I would say, supporting progressive prosecutors. And I say progressive prosecutors, I mean both capital and lowercase p.
Sure.
You know, the usual suspects, the George Soroses of the world, you know, supporting folks like Larry Krasner out of Philadelphia and others. And I want to point out here that John Criseau actually is not in that mold. He actually, in his primary, beat the Soros-funded candidate. However, there was still this general tack towards, you know, a more reform-minded prosecutor. And you know, during a debate and during his campaign, he did promise some of these reforms. Well, and the problem is, you know, a prosecutor has a very finite job to do. And how he does that, or how he or she does that, you know, has to exist within the bounds of the law. And so what happened is when he announced, you know, the actual finer points, the brass tacks of what that would include, there were some things that took people, you know, and rightfully so, took people by surprise. Now, the more we dig into this, the more we peel back the layers of the onion, we see, oh, this isn't, you know, this isn't the, this isn't turning Dallas into Thunderdome.
Yeah, right.
Or anything like that. Though I would say that there's definitely probably some mishandling on some things that could have been done and delivered better.
Certainly. So let's talk about the policy. I think I've heard some of these progressive groups out there who just like basically say, let's not prosecute shoplifting. Let's not prosecute petty theft. You know, and you've seen that proposed, you know, seriously from the left. And you kind of look at that and you go, well, okay, then that's the end of property rights. That's the end of rule of law. I mean, it's a complete, it's like, okay, maybe it's small dollars, but if it's just with done with impunity, okay, how do you even operate in a civilization whenever that's the case? But that doesn't seem, maybe that isn't what's being proposed here. So can you say specifically for listeners out there who maybe haven't seen past the headlines, what have they actually proposed in Dallas County?
Well, certainly. And I'll actually just start, you know, steering right into the skit. I'm going to start with the most controversial part. And that's with the declining to prosecute theft offenses below $750. And again, there's a big asterisk here, unless there's evidence that was for economic gain. So any sort of organized retail theft, anything in which something is fenced, you know, if you look at how this is going to apply in policy, it'll basically be kind of the Jean Valjeans of the world, I'd say, would be the ones that are targeted by this. And it's a fairly limited exception.
The problem there was the headline to me is, you can shoplift up to $750. And they said, unless there's economic benefit. And you're going, okay, well, that's what it's about. Like, that's why people steal, is for economic benefit. Well, that's the point of that. Like, and yeah, maybe there is somebody who's, you know, stealing a loaf of bread or something, but that isn't really what we're talking about, you know, typically.
Exactly. And not only that, but when that does happen, this is the part I think that definitely needs to be underlined. Declining to prosecute does not mean declining to punish. And so this is where we have to look at some of the options that are on the table. So again, this is, if you look at the $750 threshold, that encompasses all Class C and Class B misdemeanor thefts. So these are folks that in basically Dallas County already are not even getting arrested. And so I'm not saying that we leave the, you know, that there's the complete walk away from the theft. But what it has the options of doing is now with law enforcement assisted diversion, with prosecutorial diversion, these are folks that can actually be directed into programs where it's necessary. And again, you know, this is something that can have asterisks as well. Is if you look at this, you know, not prosecuting under this value, he doesn't make any sort of protection against, you know, let's say the frequent flyers there. And those frequent flyers usually are the ones who don't get that sort of diversionary treatment. And so that's what we actually want to make sure that we're doing, is offer a person an opportunity to basically still get punished, but in a way that effectively deters them from future offending. And then for folks that are Class A misdemeanor and above, you know, no change of pace. You know, I got a really quick anecdote. I come from, before academia, I came from the world of private security, and he included loss prevention very early on in that. Sure. And, you know, we had folks, and this is Ohio with a lower theft threshold, you know, we had folks that were stealing up to $1,000 worth of stuff, and we couldn't even get them taken to jail. So, you know, this just has an opportunity for the police and the prosecutors to facilitate amongst themselves, you know, a way that works for this particular subset of, I would say, of theft offender.
So that was one of the things that I heard from people out there, was they're going, some people were looking at this going, okay, it's going to turn, yeah, we're going to go to Thunderdome, right? I mean, it's going to be complete chaos. And others going, this is kind of already a system that isn't handled very well from a criminal justice standpoint. You know, how often is it that people are actually being prosecuted for a, you know, couple $100 theft, you know, is this happening now? I mean, are they saying we're not going to do it? Are they doing it now?
Well, it certainly happened. I would say this is where you get kind of the geographic distinctions. You know, I mean, I guarantee that the Gaines County District Attorney, if he had a $749 theft, that individual would probably be getting prosecuted. Also, they don't have the benefit of the economies of scale with diversion programs. So, you know, that's kind of one of the limited tools that they would have in the toolbox. Dallas, obviously, you know, major metro in the state, you know, has the option for these particular programs. And to be honest with you, pre-existing Crusoe, you know, we were seeing, you know, non-transportation for Class B thefts. We were seeing non-prosecution for Class B theft. And that was, I would say, that was even without the distinction or investigation into whether or not this particular theft was for monetary gain or economic gain.
Yeah, so it almost seems as if they've actually gone, okay, we want to try and have some kind of common sense policy of what cases we, you know, put resources into. You know, we're trying to go after people who are doing organized, you know, persistent theft, really spend the resources on trying to put those people, punish them, put them in jail, those sorts of things. And, you know, the small one-time offender, okay, we put them in some diversion program, we give them something, you know, those kinds of things. Like, it almost seems like a common sense policy poorly advertised, right?
100%.
You know, they've gone out and done that. So, like, can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and so that's the one, and here's actually where I can't give the critics an ounce of grief for this, because they're right on the nose. And I think, why do you advertise this? You know, people, there are not, I mean, obviously, you know, that, like we discussed, this is going on in Dallas County prior to, this is going on in places like Harris County currently, you know, maybe not as formalized, but when you make the announcement, and especially when the announcement's out there, and, you know, in this day and age of fake news, you know, the headline is basically what it gets peddled about.
Steal $750, it's Thunderdome, go have a great day, right? That's the headline, exactly. Right?
Exactly, and that's the biggest shortcoming is, you know, if you read the fine print, you basically say, oh, this is putting guardrails on and basically the practice that already exists. And so that got kind of out of hand. And not only that, but just from a research standpoint, you know, I do come from academia. So a research standpoint, I mean, you're basically polluting the observation, because now you have people who think with that headline that, oh, it is okay to steal $749 worth of stuff, and I won't even get, you know, I won't get a slap on the wrist. And again, the thing is, that economic gain clause is going to be a very big determinant. And not only that, but I do think that even if it's successive thefts for non-economic gain, you know, maybe the DA Creuzot is going to have to look into prosecuting those, so as getting them involved in a system, if for no other reason to get those folks, you know, the kind of treatment and however that may be.
Yeah, basically your take as a criminal justice reform guy is, if you're going to implement a reform, just implement the reform, and then, you know, a year from now you can come out and say, hey, we've been doing this for a year, the world has not caught on fire, we're having better results, you know, ideally maybe crime is down, right? You know, whatever your measurement is, just do it and then tell us whether it worked. Don't, you know, come out and advertise, you know, that there's going to be some kind of leniency.
Exactly. It's almost like you're prodding those who are, you know, who have a, you know, that actually have a moral failing that needs to be addressed. You're prodding them saying, hey, come on, let's see what's the worst you can do here in Dallas, because we're not going to take care of it, which obviously it's a much more nuanced situation than that. But that's how it read, and that's how it was advertised.
Yeah. So, all right. So this was not particularly handled well. Tell folks, you know, what is a good reform when it comes to this kind of prosecution? I mean, you guys are the experts on this. What is a good reform? What would a good reform in this arena look like?
I think the best shorthand that one can take from, especially when it comes to crimes that might, like these ones, that have more of a murky the best option is more tools in the toolbox for police, more tools in the toolbox for prosecutors. So if you look at the current legislative session, some of the legislation that I've supported thus far has been, like, for example, Class C or Class B trespassing, basically not prosecuting that, or if you're going to prosecute that, offer the ability for citation instead of arrest. This is wildly supported by law enforcement. You know, they don't want to have to pick up every bum on the street, take them downtown, you know, get them booked, and then have to do it again the next day at the same time. They want the ability to actually issue that citation. Now, some people are going to be frequent flyers. Some people are going to need that transportation. And that's why, in the spirit of preserving the most tools in the toolbox, the bill that has going through, this is Senator Watson's bill and Representative Gervin Hawkins' bill. You know, it basically preserves that officer discretion to do that. And this is something that Mr. Creuzot was actually doing within his policy. It was buried, the Class B trespass was actually buried a little farther down there. And the same thing with theft specifically. There was a bill that was filed last session. It was not filed this session. It was by Representative Burns and Senator Birdwell. And it allowed for a retail environment to actually basically do their own kind of anti-theft training when they catch somebody stealing, and it doesn't even get the police or the prosecutors involved at all. So before,
so you have some kind of restitution reconciliation between
exactly,
these people.
With waivers for indigency and everything.
Yeah,
so
it
basically said, look, we're not going to hit up the taxpayer, making them come get this bum and transport them, and then do a court ordered restitution. We're going to give them an opportunity for a half or a fraction of that, to actually deal with the issue here, and then us being done with it and not having to worry, have that decision be made. Like I mentioned earlier, we couldn't get people transported. This would be that like middle tier where they don't have to steal so much that it's a big deal, and then we're just completely looking the other way of everyone that steals under a certain amount.
Yeah,
this
right.
gives more options.
Yeah, so more tools in the toolbox. That makes sense. Tell listeners, run out of time. Tell listeners if they want to learn more about these criminal justice reform ideas, tell them how they can connect with you there at Right on Crime.
Well, they can just visit us on the website at www.rightoncrime.com, or they can see us. Our work is part of the larger Texas Public Policy Foundation, our Center for Effective Justice, at texaspolicy.com.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate the work you do, and thanks for cutting through the clutter on this one.
Anytime, Tony.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
President Trump is often referred to as the deal maker in chief, but it seems that his mentality about making good deals hasn't necessarily caught on at the Texas Capitol. Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us more about that in this week's commentary.
Taxpayers are tired of paying for the bad deals negotiated by second-rate lawmakers. With a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Each of us understand instinctively the need to keep our promises. Proverbs 25:14 reads, "Like clouds and wind without rain is a man who boasts of a life he does not give." Making a promise and delivering on it is what many of us think of as a deal. After Republicans overwhelmingly chose to elect Donald Trump as their nominee and president, every GOP politician wants to be thought of as the ultimate deal maker. However, most of them appear to have never cracked open the art of the deal. Time after time, they keep getting conned. Frankly, I'm losing track of how many times conservative legislators have told grassroots activists to stand down on an important point of principle because of a super special secret backroom deal has been made for future action on bigger issues, only that action never seems to materialize. Too many politicians want credit for making a deal without regard to whether or not anything was actually delivered. In the real world, a deal is only as good as the results. Or, as Donald Trump put it, you can't con people, at least not for long. You can create excitement, you can do wonderful promotion, get all kinds of press, you can throw in a little hyperbole, but if you don't deliver the goods, people will eventually catch on, end quote. Texas Republican majority is on the verge of being thought of as either inept dealmakers or con men. Neither is a good look for the body politic. Not a single Republican ever campaigned on the slogan that they'd impose new taxes and grow government. That's not in any of the GOP's marketing materials. They talk a great game about reducing tax burdens, of lowering taxes, of reducing the size of government, of putting bureaucracies on a strict diet. Here's the deal Texas Republicans offered. You vote for us, we'll cut taxes and limit government. Yet for two decades of GOP control of Texas, tax burdens and spending keep going up. The goods aren't being delivered. If Republicans want to continue to run the Lone Star State, they must stop with the bluster and get to work. They need to make deals that deliver on their promises. With the Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I've got for you. If you enjoyed the show, go online and subscribe. iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.